Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen in. Previously on The Rundown with Dakota Lindworm.
If I run a 10-hour marathon on Saturday, but I have fun, it doesn't really matter to me. And I think I just have to keep that mindset for myself. I'm very serious. I'm very competitive, and I want to win. But I know that if I'm focusing on those things, that I'm not going to be having like a good time. And for me, having a good time and like you mentioned in the intro, like me smiling and being so happy while I'm racing, those are the reasons I'm successful.
On this episode of The Rundown, I had a great conversation with ultra trail runner and recent Western States third place finisher, Marianne Hogan. She did elite level triathlon, distance running for her school in California, trails in Colorado, and over the last few years, Marianne has built a solid ultra running resume. Battling through serious injury, she earned herself a golden ticket to Western States and finished that race on the podium. It really seems like she's finding her stride and ready to take the ultra scene by storm. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. I was looking for a tasty, vegan-friendly alternative to traditional gels, and Exact Energy Bars passed the test. Now available in Canada and the US, you'll definitely want to try them on your next long run. And they're offering you 15% off your order when you use the promo code LARUNDOWN. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today. In this week's news, Cam Levins of British Columbia, Canada crushed his own marathon record and finished fourth at the World Athletic Championships in Eugene, Oregon, July 17th. He was able to take more than 2 minutes off his best time. This was also the highest finish for a Canadian marathoner since 1993. Cam mentioned in an interview post-marathon that he learned a lot since Tokyo Olympics and realized that there were many things he needed to change in order to become a better athlete, and it looks like that has now paid dividends. It's really good to hear that, even from an elite like Cam. We can always improve and adjust in order to become better versions of ourselves. Seems like that's the case here. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this story, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. I like following runners from all over the world, but it's always fun when you see runners who live close to you or from the same region succeed, especially on larger stages like a race such as Western States, one of the hardest 100-mile races there is. And my next guest recently completed it, had an amazing result, and I can't wait to talk to her about her journey there and also what she experienced that weekend and so much more. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Marianne Hogan.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having
me. You're welcome. Yeah, I'm thrilled to have you on, a fellow Montrealer, and you know what a, like I said in the intro, like what an amazing result at Western States, and so proud that you know, we're from the same place, and you kind of put Montreal on the map there.
Yeah, I was happy to. I really enjoyed it when I crossed the finish line, and Dylan Bowman, who was announcing the race or doing the live feed announcements, he said that there was a lot of fans from Quebec, and I was really happy to hear that. So thanks for everyone's support and everyone's interest.
I mean, and that's it's a community that's continuing to grow, especially in Canada, but like in Quebec, there's a lot of good runners coming out of this province, including yourself. Have you noticed that change over the years?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really nice to see that, you know, runners can come from all over the place, and Quebec included. You know, a lot of people are surprised sometimes when I say that I'm come from Montreal. But there are quite a bit of trails, you know, in the middle of the city, and it's definitely not something that we should just, you know, brush off. Is you can definitely excel from wherever you live and kind of work with what you're given to be able to make your way up, you know.
For sure. And so how are you feeling after after that big race?
I'm feeling pretty good, actually. The 2 days following the race is pretty difficult because I was so dehydrated. But as soon as I was able to eat again and get liquids back into my body, I started recovering really quickly. And I'm feeling much better, and I'm already running again, and I'm pretty excited for the next one.
Already, right? It's as soon as they're done, you kind of want to sign up for what's next. How long did you have that goal in mind to be able to get there, number one, and also to achieve such an amazing amazing result?
Yeah, so I started ultra running in like more seriously in 2017. And that was also kind of like my last biggest good year. I've had a lot of injuries in between. But I guess ever since I started ultra running, it was really a dream of mine to make it to Western States. I just battled through a lot of injuries in the years in between. And 2022 really seemed to be the first year where I could even consider, registering for a golden ticket race. And so it's when I registered for those races, maybe like in the fall of 2021, that it was really my main goal, is just to make sure that I firstly get a ticket to make it into the Western States. And then the big goal, obviously, is once I got that golden ticket, was transferred over to see how well I could do at Western States. But just making it there was a victory for me, and that would have been enough. But I was very thrilled with the result, for sure.
And yeah, an amazing third place finish there. And for those who don't know, you know, I've spoken to a few people who have raced Western States, and we know how they talk about how challenging it is. But what makes it really so special? Like, what attracted you to that race in particular?
Well, the history behind it. You know, when you think about it, that's really where ultra running started, is at Western States, and so it's really nice to kind of be part of, you know, the most historic ultra running race there is. But it's also, you know, the hype and the excitement and the community that's all behind it. I think that it makes it very appealing. You know, the whole city of Auburn is really just focused on Western States that weekend, and it's just a really nice running community. And it's great to be a part of that and to kind of experience it. And it's you know, when things like that are so difficult to get into, you know, you don't take things for granted. You know, you're just so excited to be able to show up on the start line, and that's enough. And just running the race, you know, you hear a lot of people who are struggling through Western States, and a lot of the aid stations, you know, the people say like, you're so lucky to be out here and to be running. And I feel like that really gives a lot of energy to those people who are maybe struggling a little more. So there is a lot of prestige and just a lot of hype behind Western States that make it so interesting, and I love that everyone around it is just super enthusiastic, and that's the kind of energy that I want to be around.
Yeah, it looks like and looks very well attended as well, and well supported by not only fans but like everyone has their teams that are, you know, taking care of their athletes, helping them with fueling and hydration and all the things you might need or all the things you don't want to think about or can't take care of when you're just trying to focus on running, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone has their own crew, their own pacers, and it makes the event so much fun. You know, it's really nice to be able to share that with loved ones and to get your loved ones to, you know, a lot of people, when you do ultra running, it's hard for people to kind of understand what you're doing if you're not like exposed to it. So I think like exposing your people to a race like Western States really gives them a feel for the reasons why you're doing it, and kind of I really appreciated that, for sure.
How do you explain it to people? Like, what are your reasons?
For me, it's just, I love running, you know, it's as simple as that. Like, I've always been someone who just likes to go on a run and not think about anything. And as long as I can run, I will run. And that's usually how I feel about, you know, every day is when I go out for a run, I'm just like, okay, well, how much time do I have left today? And that's the time that I'll take for running. And it's really hard to explain to people why you're so into it, but you just are. And like I said, like, when you bring your people to a race like Western States, I think it's very evident that there's so much excitement and it's so much fun. And it's really nice too, because I'm definitely someone who is very enthusiastic when I run. So it's really nice for them to see that it's not only suffering, and in fact, it's mostly fun with a little bit of suffering, of course, but it's nice for them to see that firsthand, so that they understand that it's really something that I like to do, and it's not just something that is difficult for me to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I think seeing is believing. I think about my parents in that regard. Like, they both were not runners, and trying to understand why, you know, I might go running every day or maybe twice a day sometimes, and that I might need time to relax and, you know, but in a sense, like, that's my way of relaxing, you know, too. It can be quite like therapeutic, you know. So that then that race, you have to, it's for me, I'm thinking about it. I'm not a 100-mile runner, 100K runner. I'm more of a marathoner, but it sounds like almost like the Boston of ultra trail running a little bit.
Yeah, of course, it really is. Western States is just kind of like the you know, people say it's like the world championships or the Olympics running, whatever you want to say, which is really nice.
And you have to qualify to get in as well, right?
Yeah, you have to qualify. There's a lottery as well. So there's a wide variety of people who can register. But making it through the lottery can be quite difficult. There are some people who have been in a lottery for like 10 years. Obviously, some people are picked before that. But it is difficult to get into. So a lot of people will try to get to race their way in, which is through golden ticket races.
Okay. And which, and you had some, again, like some pretty good results, like leading up to it, to be able to get into that race. So you got your golden ticket finally. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was really nice. I was actually pretty happy because it was really a big goal of mine to qualify for Western States. So what I did is I registered for all three golden ticket races, that were happening in North America, as of January. So there's three of them, like one every month, so it goes January, February, and April, actually. And I registered for all three, and I went out and did the Bandera 100K, which is the first one. It's like January 8th. And that's where I got my golden ticket, which I was really happy to be able to do on the first try, because first of all, like it's a big pressure off your shoulder, but it's also very nice to know so ahead of time that you are going to be racing into Western States. I was just very happy, and it's also a good boost of confidence, you know, it's like the first try, you get it on the first try, and the top two got selected, and I was able to secure a first place at Bandera. So it was very comforting and very fun. Actually, I had a lot of fun at that race, so that was great.
And for anybody that knows, you know, Montreal winters are pretty harsh. How do you prepare for a January race like that?
Yeah. So I had gone to South Africa in November. I did the 100K in November, so I only had like 6 weeks in between. So I was already kind of like in warmer weather. And then actually with the pandemic, I wasn't able to come back to Canada before like mid-December. So I was able to kind of get a lot of training into warmer weather. And then when I came back for Christmas, it was almost already like taper time. So it wasn't really an issue for me. And to be honest, like running in the winter, other than it doesn't really prepare you for warmer conditions, it definitely makes it more challenging, but it's definitely possible, you know, even in Montreal, a lot of the like cycling paths are cleared up, or running on Mont-Royal is always an option in the winter, or I do a lot of split boarding. So I think there is a way for you to train for a long distance race, even if you're living in such a cold winter as Montreal, you know?
Mm-hmm. And does your training vary based off the course that you're doing? Like, did you have to switch things up to get more specific for what you were going to face at Western States?
Not really. I actually got pretty seriously injured in March, so I kind of had to rethink my whole strategy. I was originally wanting to do more speed, just because, you know, they say that Western States is a very fast course. But in reality, you know, it is still 100 miles, and volume is more important than speed, in my opinion. I think that everyone trains differently, and that's fine. So I didn't really switch it up. I just maintained a pretty high volume, and I was lucky enough to go to California the whole month leading to the race. So that really helped my preparation as well.
Okay, so for high mileage, what are we talking for a 100-mile race?
I like to run like 100 miles a week.
Okay.
And then my longest week before Western States, I ran like 215K. And yeah, that was... That could have been pushing it a little bit, and that's something that I keep note of for next year. I probably won't go up to that level, but I'm just someone who likes to do a lot of volume, who likes to spend a lot of time on her feet, and a lot of times it's not so much to do with, you know, the specific training, but it's just I love it. You know, I love going on long runs on the weekends and just spending some time exploring. So. That usually leads to big weeks, and I usually try to refrain myself from running more than 100 miles, but sometimes I get a little overly excited.
How do you break it up? I'm just curious because I'm trying to figure out how to get over like 100K a week, you know, and just to up my volume a little bit, find some consistency over that 100K mark. So how do you break it up to be able to get that kind of, because we're talking another, you know, 60, 80 kilometers or something?
So I usually do a lot of like little runs. So I'm definitely someone who will do like morning, lunch and dinner kind of run, because I do work a 9-to-5 job. So that's the easiest way for me to get my mileage in, is if I break it up into different sections. So I do a lot of like broken up mileage throughout the week. And then on the weekends, I do back-to-back long runs. So you know, when you do long runs on the weekends, like your mileage will vary, like it goes up significantly. That's usually how I do it. I'm usually able to get 100 miles that way. Even sometimes I have to refrain myself on a Sunday because I ran too much during the week, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. So do you pick a destination and just go? Like, I find the best way for me to get lost and get some higher kilometers is just by going to try and discover something new, you know? Is that a strategy you've implemented, or do you plan your routes, or how do you do it?
Yeah, I planning my routes is like one way to look at it, but I really like to go places, you know, like, so even if I'm in Quebec, so if I'm from Montreal, I will be going somewhere over the weekend, and then I'll be like, okay, I'm going in this area, what's the route that I can run there? And that's usually how I plan my weekends, and I'm usually always away during the weekend, like somewhere, you know, road trip distance from Montreal, and then I do some long distances there. So I definitely plan my routes, but it's always like an exciting place to go explore, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good piece of advice for sure, and one that I can definitely prescribe to. But like just last week, even like what you were saying, the back-to-back long runs helps too. I was a bit behind in my mileage, but you know, 2 25K days, couple hours of easy running, you can get there quickly, you know, and I can see how the smaller runs too, don't make it so daunting, right? Because sometimes that's hard to get out, you know, you're like, oh, I can't get my hour in, let's say. But if you go for, you know, three times 30 minutes, well, that's maybe a bit more manageable. So I like what you said there. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and like for me, it's always like I have the same mentality about like weight training or something like that. Like I don't get caught up too much if, you know, all I can do is a 5K run, because those 5K runs, they add up. And you know, those little 15 minutes in the gym, they add up as well. So whatever you can do, my biggest suggestion is do whatever you can when you can do it. And don't get caught up in the fact that like it's too small to make a difference, because everything added up does end up making a difference, you know?
Yeah, like the frequency of outings is also pretty valuable, I'd say, right?
Yeah, and it's also not as hard on the body. You know, if you're someone who knows that volume is quite difficult on your body, it's an excellent way for you to go get that extra mileage, is to split up your runs and go run in the morning, go run in the evening. I understand that lunchtime isn't possible for everyone, but I think that way to go and get that extra volume.
For sure. So what do you do for work, and how are they very understanding of this this passion, career, profession that you're pursuing?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm an HR manager at an IT company in Montreal. It's called three technologies. And I do a lot of recruiting. So I'm able to do that from a distance. But I do. I also manage the culture and the environment of the company and things like that, and work on developing it. So that's definitely something that is more that I can do better when I am in person. So they're very understanding, though. You know, they were very, very supportive of me when I wanted to go to California for a month to kind of just prepare for Western States and kind of zone in to my biggest race. And so I think the pandemic has also helped, because a lot of the individuals from my company are now working from home. So I can kind of work remotely, but it is still important for me to come into the office. And that is why I'm often back in Montreal, making sure that, you know, things are under control here in the office, kind of thing.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, I'm also a running coach. So I'm a coach under Le Coaching du Coureur. So I have quite a few athletes that are doing, you know, anything from mostly ultra running. But it can be like anywhere from like 25K trail up to 100 miles. And so I do a lot of that in my spare time as well.
Amazing. That's great. So what's the kind of reaction you're getting from people at work? Are they like-minded people? Are they, you know, office people and they don't exercise too much?
it's really interesting, because we hire, you know, one of our hiring criteria is in a certain way. We really look for people with different types of passion. So, you know, it might not be a bunch of people that are passionate about running, but we have a bunch of people that are passionate about a lot of different things. So they kind of get enthusiastic about talking about those things together. And so people are very enthusiastic about what I do, but obviously there's not a lot of other ultra runners within the company, except for the president. The president of the company, he runs ultras, and I actually had the opportunity to go out and pace him at Western States in 2019. So that was a lot of fun, and I'm glad that I, you know, I was able to share that moment with him. And it was also a pretty, you know, it gave me a good knowledge of the course even before making it out there. So that was great.
Oh, that is good. So you have a connection with, you know, I'd say one of the best people in the company. So he definitely understands what you're going through. So was there anything, you know, because you got to scout the course, was there anything that you were like surprised by, or that you said, oh, I definitely have to remember that in my training, or make a mental note of that?
Well, it was interesting, because I did ask for his advice on a few things, because I've run with him quite a bit and he knows my type of running. And so I was asking him a lot about, you know, if he thought that the downhill, because a lot of people say about Western States is that the downhill can really, really tax your legs. So I was kind of asking his perspective, like, is that something that he felt was an issue and would be an issue for me? So it was really nice to kind of get that perspective from someone that I feel comfortable with asking, because he also knows the way that I run. And it's like you said, it's really nice to be able to share that with such an important member of the company, just in the sense that, like I said, like, the values are super important for us within our company. And so it's really nice to know that we are aligned on that level.
Yeah, it's great that you know that you have the support, for sure. And, you know, it makes it so that much easier to get into these kind of, you know, passion projects and events, because, you know, you have them behind you. So that's great. How do you keep it relatable to your athletes? Because, you know, you're now at a certain level, you know, of, you know, elite trail running, and then, you know, you're training different levels of athletes. So how do you keep it relatable to them?
Yeah, that's a good question, but I would say it's very easy to answer. Like, I'm really not someone who, you know, I may have elite level results, but I am very, you know, my training is very, you know, on a more primary basis, in the sense of I focus a lot on volume, and that really works for me. So for my training, it's a lot of like really easy running, but just a lot of it. And so I think that it's very simplistic, and I have an approach that is really based on making sure that I'm always having fun, because when you're running an ultra and when you're running 100 miles, like, I think there's no way that you can get through it if you're not having fun and if you're not doing it for the right reasons. So I think that in that regard, regardless of what results I will get, I think that as long as I continue to use that approach for myself and for my athletes, you know, people can accomplish big things. And I think that that's how I'm able to connect with my athletes. And like I said, it's just a matter of, you know, playing with the plans with my athletes to make sure that it corresponds to what they need, because I understand too that it's not because I'm willing to spend like 25 hours training per week that everybody has the ability or the desire to do that. And so it's just a matter of adapting yourself to your athletes. And that's really what I want to do, is just make sure that, you know, however much time you have to give to ultra running is what we'll take, and we'll prepare you in the best of your abilities. And I'm very adaptable, flexible. And like I said, the most important thing is that people are having fun and that they're working towards their goals, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's always number one as well. I mean, if you're not enjoying it, why do it? It's supposed to be fun. A lot of us are not doing this for careers. Even some of the best runners are not able to do it as a career, even with all the talent. And I like what you said about, you know, running more often and more frequently at like easy pace. Do you think this is like, I understand that now, but only after years of running. Do you think that's a concept that's pretty simple to say, but really hard to grasp for a lot of runners?
Yeah, and I think too, like, it is true that if you do a lot of slow running, it'll help, as long as you do a lot of it. So for my athletes, for example, a lot of them do have workouts or do have like hill repeats or things like that, just because you do have to have a combination. You know, if you're running like 100 mile a week, then yes, you'll have less intensity. But if you're running less, then that's where you play with the two triggers. You know, volume and intensity are two things that I always evaluate when I build a training plan for my athletes and when I build a training plan for myself. So I do think that it's, you know, as long as you have the time to give to ultra running, I think that running easy will often be a good solution. But I think that if you have less time, then that's where you have to kind of play with volume intensity or with intensity, sorry, and more specific workouts and things like that.
For sure. And also, you know, building a smart plan so that you can, you know, you've had your fair share of injuries. And so like to prevent those things from happening to the best of our ability, like that's obviously you can't decide when you're going to get hurt or not, but we can do our best to kind of implement a training style that's good for our bodies. And also that's going to help us gradually improve and also stay injury free.
Yeah, of course. And the thing, like it's 3 years of experience that I've noticed for myself is if I do intensity and volume at the same time, it just doesn't work for me. Because that's where I have a higher chance of injury, and I just don't want to risk that anymore. So I take decisions like that for myself. But for my athletes, that's the thing, is that, you know, you learn how to work with different people and what their needs and how their body responds. And I think that's the most important thing about ultra running, is that there's 1,000 different ways to train for 100 miles. And it's just a matter of figuring out what's the best way for you. And there's no secret recipe. It's just, you know, you really have to adapt to what you need and what your schedule allows as well. So and how you respond to different types of training as well, I think is most important.
For sure. What would you say is more difficult, running a 100-mile race or trying to come back from serious injury?
I probably have to say coming back from serious injury, just because running 100 miles, like as difficult as it is, there's so much pleasure and so much fun in the process. Like running 100 miles, kind of like the peak of your building back up process. You know, it's like your treat at the end of a hard day. You know, so I think that is just, if you look at it that way, there can be a lot of joy in doing that. But the process of making it there is usually quite difficult, and it's possible for you to find joy in it, but it's the same thing for when you're building back up from an injury. You know, the few times that I got injured a lot, my biggest injury was a fracture of my leg. So I had a spiral fracture where I broke my tibia and my fibula. And I required 2 surgeries, and was months without running, and months where I was having difficulty just walking. So when I started running again, it was actually quite painful, just the process of running, and like running a 5K or 10K was something that was very difficult for me to do. And it's quite challenging to go through that process because you used to run ultras, now you're having difficulty running a 5K or a 10K. So it's very difficult to kind of go through that process again and kind of make sure that you're motivated by it and that you still believe that you can return. So it's a difficult process, but it's also very, very motivating to know that you can build yourself back up from the ground up. And when you build yourself back up from injury and you make it to a race like Western States, for example, you're just so much more happy to be there. Like, I really believe that, my injuries made it so that I'm so, so happy to be out on the trails at all times because running is such a privilege for me now. So I think there's joy and there's pain in both things, but I would say that there's probably more joy in the 100 mile as a whole.
Yeah, and especially this one after that injury. So that's...
Yeah.
Do you think you found the secret to staying healthy now, or was running the cause of that big injury that you had?
I think that I've definitely found the key spot that works for me. I've changed a lot of things. Like I said, like I really focus on either volume or intensity. I try not to do both at the same time. I really, really manage my training load now. I didn't used to. I used to kind of just run when I wanted, what I wanted, and I like that carefree attitude. But I think that to a certain point, like I really needed to refrain myself from running more than 100 miles because that's when I get injured. I would say too, nutrition is super important. When you run 100 miles, it's very, very important that you nourish your body in an appropriate way. And I think that just dialing in to all of these different items will make it so that, you have a better control of your injury rate. But there are some injuries that you can't really control. Now it's because of my injury, my fractured leg. Like I have very, very poor ankle mobility, and I twist my ankles at all times, and so that's very difficult for me sometimes. But it's a challenge, and you just have to you just have to do your best to confront that challenge.
Yeah, do you think it's just made you more mindful of all the aspects that go into it?
It's definitely made me more mindful, and I think that it's made me a better athlete today. Even though I missed out on a lot of years of racing, I think that I'm a more complete athlete today because of the things that happened to me, and I would say not even athlete, but just a more complete person. Because when you go through adversity and you go through difficult things, then you really do appreciate the little things, and that is something that is really important for me today still. And I think it makes a big difference when you're running yourself to the ground, like in a 100 mile race.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, coming back too from these injuries got to be tough on the mental when you're used to going all the time and then you can barely walk. This is something that probably is very, very difficult for somebody to go from basically 100 miles a week to virtually nothing. It's got to be frustrating too, but I'm sure it helps you with the mental game.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult, but I think that's where balance is really important. Like having a job is super important for me to kind of channel my energy in different areas. I think that if I channel all my energy into running, I think that would be very dangerous for me. But so I think that really helps me keep my balance. And when I was injured, then I was really focused more on work. But the thing that's difficult too is when a lot of your a lot of your people are very active people, then when you're injured, that's what makes it really difficult as well, because mm-hmm. you you can't join in on a lot of things. And I think that was the most difficult thing for me is not so much your racing, because, you know, racing is kind of like a bonus, but it was more all the process, you know, like people going out for long weekend runs and things like that. Like, I think that was very, it's very difficult for me because it's, you can't do anything in crutches, you know? So
yeah. You want to go play, you know?
I can't play. I'm just grounded.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. You know, watching all your buddies go out and have a great time and you're usually with them. That sucks. You know, it's not a good feeling, I'm sure. Was there a moment when you realized that you had some really good potential at this, that you could actually be pretty good at it?
Yeah, I mean, when I started ultra running, like my first ultra was in 2016. I did fairly well. But I think where it really started for me was in 2017. I had a lot of really good races, and I went out and did a race. It was in Colorado, and I was racing against Casey Lichtig, who had won Western States, and Claire Gallagher, who also won Western States later on. I ended up beating them. So I ended up getting first in that race. So that was that was where kind of like, I was like, I actually have potential at this. I think it's really interesting. You know, it's like anyone has the opportunity to go out and race to the best of their abilities. And it's just a matter of having one good race where you can really believe that you can do great things. And it doesn't have to be a race, you know, it can be just good training or anything like that. Like, I think as long as you believe in the process and you believe in your ability, I think that anyone can, you know, that's what's fun about ultra running, is that the race is for everyone to take, because there's so many variables and there's so many things that can happen. So I think that it's really important that when you show up to the start line, you believe that you can also do well, regardless of who is around you. But I do think that having one good performance really helps you believe even more. But it would be nice, you know, for people to have that belief before they even have that one breakthrough performance. Because like I said, ultra, there's so many, you know, during 100 miles, it's not necessarily the fastest person that wins. It's the one that has the best race. But everyone can have the best race of their life on any given day, is my opinion. So I don't know. I think that believing is super important, and just keeping your head in the game regardless of what's going on around you is also very important.
And maybe it helped that, I mean, at that time, did people know you very well at all, or did you kind of fly under the radar?
Yeah, I was flying under the radar. I think that, like, if people were to put bets, like, as to who would have won that race, I definitely don't think that anyone would have put my name, which is really fine, you know. It's really great, like I said. Like, I think Western States, like, not a lot of people put me in the top three either, and like I said, that's really fine. As long as you believe that you can do well, you can do great things. So it's just a matter of showing up to the start line ready as you can be, and feeling confident and feeling ready to race, and think you can do well.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's really cool, and I love hearing that, you know, that, you know, beyond, you know, the Instagram feeds or Facebook or whatever people are using, like, no one other than people close to you see what kind of preparation you're doing, right? So
yeah, exactly.
You know what kind of work you're putting in, how many hours a week you're putting in, and, you know, when you toe the line, no one sees any of that. They just see a person in front of them, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Who's to say that you can't do that, you know, the training that they're doing, and have a day like they're also able to have. So I think that's, we're all human, you know, in the end. And
yeah, of course.
That's pretty cool. I like to go back to the beginning, just to find out, you know, where you grew up, were you athletic, where did this, like, endurance engine come from?
Yeah, so I grew up in the Eastern Townships in a small town called Bedford. And I'm the youngest of four children. So and we're actually 4 and 4 years, so we're very, very close in age. And we really grew up, you know, practicing sports of all kinds. We were never, you know, it surprises a lot of people when I say this, but we were never really allowed to watch TV. Like most of our time was spent outside. And I think that that's really where I developed kind of my love for sports and endurance sports, but also just trying to keep up with my older brothers and my sister. And so I grew up as a swimmer and eventually transitioned over to triathlon. I did triathlon actually for most of my teenage years. So I did like from I did a lot. I was on the national team as a junior. I participated in world championships. And then when I got to 18 years old, it was really a dream of mine to go and study in the United States. So I really wanted to go to a athletic program out there. So I applied to a few schools and I flew out to California. I went to San Diego, San Diego State, actually. And for 5 years there, I ran the 10K. So that's really all I did. I ran the 10K. Ran a lot of those races. And then at the end of that, I was kind of really, I really, really loved running, but I was really over, you know, specific pacing and specific workouts and anything like that. So the transition over the trail kind of happened very smoothly. It was more of a, I just want to keep running, but I don't want to know how fast I'm going. I don't care. I don't, you know, so I really wasn't interested into moving into more the marathon route, but more the ultra marathon route. So that's kind of how I got into the ultra running scene. And I also happened to be living in Boulder, Colorado at the time. So I lived in Boulder for 3 years. And that's really where I developed my love for running and my love for trail running.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I can imagine like running in circles, like running 10Ks on the track. It's like, was it on the track? Am I?
Yeah, it was on the track.
Yeah, that's got to be, you know, like you said, limiting and also like very specific kind of training. And, you know, I'm sure you had like coaches and stuff and practice and all that.
Yeah, it was just, it was really fun. Like I really enjoyed it and being part of a team and racing, you know, every other weekend. I really enjoyed it and I would definitely do it again if I were to go back in time. But I wouldn't continue doing it just because, like I said, I'm definitely more of a free spirited mind and running 25 laps around the track doesn't bring for a lot of creativity, you know. So it's yeah. So it was a very good build up too. Like I do think that my track years do help me today, and I'm really thankful that I did them. But I'm really happy to be in the ultra running scene right now.
Yeah, because the 10K on the track is like pretty painful too. I mean, that's it's a speed that's pretty uncomfortable. And like I said, running in circles is also mentally challenging. So you're kind of in this threshold where you're, you know, you're exhausting yourself pretty much and for a good amount of time as well, right? So I can imagine. And what I see now in a lot of athletes is, you know, the ones that had kind of a pedigree or a background in track and field, they tend to do well in longer stuff, you know, because I guess maybe the turnover translates well, or the strength or the explosiveness, maybe. I'm not sure, but
yeah, a lot of things. And I think that the mental game too, like a 10K is very hard mentally because you're really, really running like at a very high threshold for 25 laps, and that's very hard mentally. Like I think at the end for me running track, that was the hardest part, is to really show up at the start line like motivated to do it, which I think is super important. Like I think you can't excel at a race if you're not motivated and you want to do it. And I think at the end I was kind of like I was lacking joy in the experience of the 10K, just because it was, you know, you just go through the pain cave so much. And it was lacking diversity, you know, 25 loops is, but I think that it really helped me, you know, like, and I'm really happy that I did it, but I was just ready to move on to other stuff.
Mm-hmm. And were you competitive at that stage?
Oh, I was okay. Like my fastest 10K is 35:19. So I was okay. I wasn't like, I definitely wasn't the best runner, but I was okay at it. You know, I was competing with my team and that was great.
For sure. And so like you said, you mentioned like heading into the trails was like a nice progression to you know, discover new places and this sort of thing. But like the difference between a 10K and 100 mile is like people, anybody hearing that would say that's pretty drastic in terms of like overall distance and volume. Was that a slow progression, or did you just kind of hit the trails for hours at a time? And like, I'm just curious to know what that looked like.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a progression. So I raced for 5 years in San Diego, and my last year kind of ended with me running the 10K, and then I stayed in San Diego for maybe another half a year or something like that, because I was doing my master's business administration out there. Mm-hmm. So all the while I was in San Diego, I just kept running, but wasn't really, you know, running for anything specific. I was just doing it because I loved it. And then after that, I moved to Boulder, Colorado, and that's really where I started running into trail running, and I found a group out there, and that's really what drew me into trail running, is also the community. You know, I made friends so easily, and I really, really loved it. So that's where I really transitioned into a more serious approach to ultra trail running. But you know, I did it. I ran a first trail half marathon, and then I ran a trail marathon, and then I did the ultra marathon, like I did the 50 mile. And then I ran 50 miles for a little while. And actually, Western States was my first 100 miles. So that was years after I started trail running. And I also, you know, I've had a lot of injuries since then. So that's also what slowed down my 100 mile entry. But there was definitely a big progression before I did my first 100 mile.
Okay, that's cool. So yeah, definitely like joining the run community too helps a lot. And especially, you know, I find the trail, I don't know if you felt it in triathlon at the level that you were doing at, but I found like when I was doing triathlon, it was a bit the same as the trail community in a sense. Like everyone's just so welcoming and encouraging as well. And it's, you know, it's generally like longer distances, or you're spending a lot of time. So you got to find good groups to run with or bike with or swim with, because you're just out there for so long, you know?
Yeah, of course. And I even think that trail running is even like a level higher, because it's, you know, I think the difference for me in between triathlon and trail running is that trail running is a lot less about stats and way more about adventure. So it's really easy to go on an adventure with people versus triathlon. Like, I feel like a lot of times you're focused on like either your pace or your wattage on the bike or your, you know, specific workouts in the swim. And so I think that it's even more community based, because you know, you're just looking for people to go out on the long weekend run, you know? So I think that the community to me really, really reaches out on the trail running side, because it is so community focused, and it is much less about what speed you're going, but it's more about where you're going.
For sure. Any itch, do you have an itch to get back into triathlon someday, or have you kind of left that behind you?
So I actually, for the last 2 years, I had been working as a guide, for a blind triathlete. We went to Tokyo, actually. We went to the Paralympics in Tokyo last year. And I still work with the team. It's just, it's kind of hard at the moment to do both, 100 miles and be a Paralympic guide. So I'm focusing more of my efforts, into trail running, but I will be, back training with them probably in the fall.
Oh, nice. How'd you get into that?
So it's actually when I was injured. So I used to, like I said, I was on the junior team I went to a couple world championships on the national team, and one of the with the athletes who was on the team at the moment at the time, who she was a senior, so an elite. She became the coach of the Paralympic team. And it's actually pretty hard to find a guide, because it can't be someone who's racing for themselves on the circuit. It really has to be someone who's completely dedicated to guiding. But it has to be someone who's still in shape and still races. So it's very hard. You know, the pool of candidates for guiding is very limited. And so they reached out to me just when I was injured, actually, just when I was recovering from my broken leg. And it ended up being a very, very good timing, because I couldn't really run that much at the time. So the triathlon training was actually really good for me. And I'd say that it really prepared me for this year. You know, like the past 2 years, I've been training quite a lot as a triathlete to do my work as a guide, because I do the whole triathlon with my athlete. So that was a really good preparation for me as well.
Yeah. Would you say that, I mean, that's amazing. That's really amazing. Great of you to do that, you know, to help out in that way. And also you see the benefits in your training. So, would you say that like, that's good cross training for the ultra stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, I would say that it's perfect cross training, and I still bike today. I still, you know, biking is probably the sport that I do the most, outside of running, except for the winter. The winter, I like to do a lot of split boarding, but I do think that cross training is really important to any type of ultra training. And I definitely think that triathlon is a good combination for sure.
Yeah. And I can definitely agree with you there. Cause when I was doing, like longer distance triathlon, did 70.3 and Ironman, I don't think I've ever felt fitter than I did then, you know, in 2017, 18 or 16, 17, I'm not sure, but, with the biking and the swimming and the three sports that go, I think that's something people should pay more attention to maybe than, you know, even if they're a runner, to try and find something else that's complementary to the running, just to give yourself like a break. And I like the active recovery. I think that's also a lot of fun, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure.
And a way to get around. So, and do you do a lot of, do you do weight training as well on top of that? Like, I'm trying to figure out how do you manage your time? Because there's only so many hours in a day with the, you know. Training, yeah. And work and guides and, you know, like.
Yeah. I'm just someone who like will use all of my free time to train. Okay. So it's really easy actually, if that's what you're doing and that's what your focus is, and it's easy to get all the training in. You know, even if you're working a 9-to-5 job, like I said, like if you wake up at like 6 or 6:30, then you can get like a 2-hour run before you make it to work. Or weight training or anything like that. And I usually, you know, I always do something at lunchtime. Like for me, if I don't do that, actually, it's kind of like, I don't even think that I'm nearly as productive in the afternoon, because you kind of lose my, you know, I need that mental hour lunch to do something else. And so when I'm here at the office, our office has a gym. So I do usually use that lunchtime to either go on a run or go into the gym. And then in the evening, you know, if you finish at 5, you have a lot of time. Like I can go until 8 or 9 PM, before I make it home. And so that's a lot of time that you can dedicate to training. And obviously not every day includes all three sections, but, every day, provides the opportunity to choose between those sections. So I think it's pretty easy in the summertime mostly because, you know, up until 9 PM, it's clear outside. But even, and then you have the weekends, which are a huge opportunity for you to do that. So to answer your question, I absolutely do weight training. I don't do a lot of like heavy weights. It's just, I do a lot of complementary things that, also help me, reduce injury risks.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So now we kind of covered the training, cross training, how you pay your bills, but how do you feed yourself?
Yeah.
I'm trying to stop you here. You know?
Yeah. No, I'm usually, like I'm someone who eats very diverse, but I'm a big, I really, really love vegetables. I'm not a vegetarian, but that's just like, I really love them. And so in terms of eating, like a lot of people are like, okay, well, where do you eat dinner? And usually what happens is I end up making it home at like 8:30 or 9 and I'm starving. And then I have like a little organic grocery store next to my house that I just hit up every night, and but that's usually how I figure out dinner, and that really works for me. Like I'm not someone who necessarily needs to sit down and have like a formal dinner with someone else. It's just I just get home, I eat what I need to eat, and then I go straight to bed, you know, and then I wake up the next day and I do the exact same thing. So it is possible. It's just a matter of setting your priorities. Like my priority isn't to leave work and figure out what's for dinner at 6 PM. It's more like I leave work and I do what I need to do. And then I figure out dinner by the time I get home. So.
For sure. That's yeah. Okay. So that's good. Just kind of take what's easy, get the fuel in, get the recovery going, and let's, you know, move on to the next.
I love cooking, but I don't, honestly, I don't take the time to, I don't have time. Like by the time I make it home, I'm usually exhausted and I just want to eat as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
But the like I said, like the little grocery store that I have by my house is perfect because it has a lot of like ready to eat options that are, and I, like I said, I like vegetables and I like them raw. So it's really easy for me to get food that I really appreciate and that fuel me well and that get me ready for the next day.
For sure. And I'm sure you're also eating while you're training too, right? To test out different stuff. So what's the diet like for a big training day or a 18-hour race?
Yeah. So I'm with NAC Nutrition. So I use a lot of their products on a daily basis and even and during a race for sure. And they just put out some drink liquid mix, which provide like 250 calories per 500 milliliters, which is a lot. So during a race, that's usually what I'll rely on. And they have some waffles that I really, really like. And it's probably something that I eat the most. I eat them every day. They're delicious. And during a race, I will eat them as well. But during the day, what I usually do is, like I said, I wake up, I usually have a coffee and that waffle, and then I take off. And when I get into the office is where I'll have a bigger breakfast. So it can be whatever, a lot of different options. Mm-hmm. And then I definitely take the time to have a lunch at the office. Even if I go running, you know, I usually go running and then I come in and have a lunch, which can be a variety of things. There's also grocery stores around the area here. So I usually just go out and grab a few items that and they'll fill me up, and then I'll have a snack before I head back out for the evening, and then I'll have, like I said, a dinner when I get home at night. So that's usually what I do, and I try to get as much variety as I can. Usually my most prominent ingredient will be vegetables, and I always try to complement that with protein and obviously other things. But I would say those are the staples for sure.
Okay, cool. So just finding some balance in that and again, quick, easy fuel and frequently eating. I think, I mean, I'm always eating at work and especially when I'm training heavily and stuff. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Do you have any like funny stories, like funny run stories or maybe something you've experienced in a race that we might find entertaining?
Funny story. That's a good one. I don't know which one I could start off by.
So there's more than one.
Definitely. There's always funny things going on. So I guess when I broke my leg, that's a funny one. When I broke my leg, I was on the trail that was like connected to a camping site, and we needed someone to drive me out of the camping site. And the first person that my brother could find was a little bit of an overweight fella that wasn't wearing a shirt and had clearly consumed a lot of beers.
<Uh-oh>.
and he came out and tried to give me like, tried to lift me out, and was way too confident in the process. it was kind of an interesting process. And then he put me in his car in the back seat, and in the behind his seat, there's a lot of empty beer cans, like a lot. The whole back seat is just filled. And my brother and I are just like, okay, we really need this guy's help, but we also don't want to die in the process.
Right.
And then the guy says, okay, like the exit where he needed to bring me so that we can get on an ambulance was towards the left, and he makes a right turn. And we're like, okay, where is this guy bringing us? And so I'm not really able to talk because I'm kind of like in pain back there. And right. My brother goes, where are we going? And he goes, oh, we're just gonna go tell my. And then he says this girl's name. Like he says, on va juste dire à Nicole that I'm driving you to the exit. And then my brother goes, who's Nicole? And he, your girlfriend? And he goes, well, more of my weekend girlfriend. So anyways, that guy was kind of the, and then he ends up driving to his camping site, and we realized that the only thing he wanted was to go grab his cigarettes. And so he grabs his cigarette and then he drives me back at the exit. And that's how I was transported out of my trail when I got my broken leg. We'll always remember that guy. And we were thinking like, oh man, are we going to make it out of here safely?
this guy has his priorities on straight for sure.
Yeah. For sure.
That's great. What's the best running advice you can give? I'm sure you give lots to your athletes.
Yeah. My biggest advice is really to run as slowly as possible, as often as possible. Like, it depends what you want to do, but if you want to do ultras, like I said, like, I just think that there's a lot to be said about really easy running, but a lot of it. And I think that that's very underrated. And I think that a lot of people are usually focused on speed and they're too focused on speed. But if you're running 100 miles, you're not going to be running that fast. And what you're going to need is definitely volume. So I think that that's usually what I focus on. And I give a lot of, you know, zone one running to my athletes. And a lot of them usually come back to me and say like, oh, I don't really feel comfortable running that easy. And I'm just like, my point is just like, well, you got to keep running easy because you're going to have a lot to do. And if you're running too fast and you're not going to be able to do the volume, and that's what's going to be, that's going to, you know, that's what's most important, really.
The key to success there. Yeah. And I think, like we were saying earlier, that's a concept that not a lot of people have a hard time understanding what that means, you know, because I think you see it less maybe in ultras, but people are so focused on the numbers. Like whenever someone tells me that they're getting into running or that they're just starting back again, they're always telling me about the pace that they've done, you know? And
yeah, of course.
When someone asks me, I try and just say like how long I went for, you know, like just some, a period of time that I went out for. I'm not worried about the kilometers or the pacing. I just, you know, unless it's a specific type of workout, you know, it's good to see where your effort level is at. But yeah, I think that's really important advice and to stay healthy. And would you say that like zone one is like a conversational pace? Like, how do you describe it to people?
Yeah, I'm like as easy as you can go. You know, it's like the pace that you could hold for like 24 hours straight. You know, it's like super easy running. Like, don't focus. My point is just like, just don't focus on pace and you'll fall into your zone one. So that's usually what I tell my athletes. And like a lot of people will usually use their watch to like say like, okay, my heart rate, like according to my watch, I'm running zone two. And I'm like, don't even look at your heart rate. Like, just go running. And whatever you feel like zone one is today, just run in that pace. Because like your zone one day might not be the same as another. Like sometimes when I'm really, really tired, my zone one is super easy, super, super easy. And then other days it's a little faster. So it really depends on to how you're feeling. And that's really what is most important, is just how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that too. Exactly. That's, I mean, I only have one athlete, but that's, I try and tell her the same thing, that like today and tomorrow are different and the next day is going to be different. Just like racing can be. You know, it doesn't mean that the race is on this specific date that it's going to be, you know, it could be one of your bad days. It could be one of your good days. All we can do is prepare for the best we can. But similarly, it goes for training. And that's where the bigger part of the journey is, I think, you know, where you're out there every single day practicing. And, you know, you don't know, maybe you got 6 hours of sleep when you're used to getting 8 hours of sleep, or, you know, there could be so many different reasons, you know, right? So
yeah, or the training the day before, and like a lot of things affect the way that you're feeling. And it's just a matter of like taking it day by day and respecting your limits on that day. And I think that that's what's most important.
For sure. What would you say you're most proud of?
Most proud of? Oof, that's a good one. I'd say a combination of, you know, making it back from all of these injuries and making it back to performing at a level that I am happy with. I think that there's a lot to be said about that. And I'm really happy that I was able to do that. But more in terms of performances, I would have to say that, you know, my two performances to get my golden ticket, I think that that was very, very important for me to, you know, prove to myself that I could make it to that level and that I earned my spot to Western States. And then, you know, Western States in itself, we didn't really talk about the details, but it was a really rough day for me. I was dealing with back pain, and I had really, really bad nausea. So fighting through all of that and kind of just keeping your mental game on so that you're moving regardless of what pace you can move. And I think fighting through all the aches and pains for a third place finish was a very good moment for me. And I'm really happy that I pushed through all of that. And most importantly, it was a moment that I was really happy to be able to share with my friends and family, and that they also helped me push to that level. And I am very proud of that.
So you just mentioned that, but like, was that something that you felt early on, or was it late in the later stages? And how did you get through that, those moments?
Yeah. So my back pain was something that I had before I even showed up, you know, on the day of. So I've been dealing with it for the last 2 weeks leading up to Western States. I kind of pulled something in my back, and my whole left side was super jammed. So it's really hard for me to go uphill, actually. For me, the 2 weeks leading up to the race, it was really like I barely ran, which is very, very rare for me. But it was more about trying to stay in the game mentally. It's not because you're going through these issues that you know, they can necessarily take over your whole entire race. And that was the most difficult. And I'm really glad that I did, because it did cause me issues during the race, but I was also able to complete the race, which I think proves that when you're going through some stuff, it's worth fighting through it to see what happens, and you can't let the negative kind of take over the positive things that are going on. You know, like, even if I was in pain and even if things weren't going as perfect as I hoped that they would be going, I was still able to make progress, and eventually I did make it to that finish line, and I made it in a respectable finish time. So it's just a matter of staying positive through all of those moments and just moving forward.
All right, So were there moments of doubt, or do you have moments of doubt? Do you have that mentality that you can keep pushing forward through pain? Like, the pain is probably an obvious thing that you expect to go through, but was there ever any moments where you're like, guys, I this doesn't make sense anymore, or, you know, just the self-doubt has to creep in at some point.
Yeah, it definitely creeps in at some point, and it was actually really funny because so I was nauseous from like kilometer 35 up until kilometer like 80, which is very early on in the race. And that puts in a lot of doubts in my mind. Like, it put in a lot of doubts in my mind. And during that whole time, I was just thinking to myself, like, man, I'm having such a bad day. Like, this is so bad. And I kept telling this to myself. And at the same time, I was like, okay, but just keep moving. And I needed to remind myself that everyone has highs and lows in 100 miles. And I was just going through a low at that point, and eventually it was going to turn around for me. And I just need to believe that will happen. And it was really funny because whenever I would run into an aid station, I felt like I was having the worst day of my life. And my crew just kept telling me like how great I looked and how good I was doing. And if I kept going in that direction, I was going to make the top five. And they kept telling me things like that. And it was really funny because in my head, I was like, there's no way, like, I'm having the worst day. There's no way that's happening. But as soon as someone says something to you like that, it's also really easy for you to shift and just kind of like hold on to it and, mm-hmm. and kind of just say like, oh, maybe I am doing not so bad, and just keep moving. And eventually, you know, things did turn around for me. I was able to eat. I was able to feel better. And at that point, I was able to really run a race, as to before, I was just trying to like survive, making it to wherever it is that I was going. So there was a shift, and that really helped me kind of get through the whole entire race and kind of cover the negative aspects of it.
Yeah, that's amazing that you were able to do that and persevere and accomplish something that you maybe thought was impossible, you know, and or to get that kind of result, you know, which is amazing. So, did you have time to enjoy it after with the other the other the finalists? Are you meeting people that maybe you looked up to in the sport now? Especially at a race like that?
Yeah, I'd say that the day after was definitely more something that I was able to do. But the day of, what happened is I crossed the finish line and immediately my body kind of went into shock. I was super dehydrated. I was like incredibly dehydrated. And when I crossed the finish line, I threw up some more and quite a bit of it. So my body was so weak that I lay down and then I couldn't really do anything. So I was able to talk for like maybe the first 15 minutes that I crossed the finish line. But after that, I was kind of like, I'm no good to anyone. So the next day is when I kind of was feeling better. But as we discussed offline, I was still super dehydrated because when I did an interview the day after, I still fainted. So I was still struggling. But, you know, I think the whole race in itself and the build up to it, like the training camp that I went to with my Solomon team for the whole month before, but also the Memorial State training camp was very, very helpful and very, very fun, into meeting different people that I look up to, people who excelled at Western States, and people who are just incredibly good people. And that was a lot of fun. And I'm glad that I was able to get these friendships. And even during the race, you know, I ran with people that I really, really admire. And it was just such a memorable experience.
Yeah. It sounds like you had the full Western States package, you know, like the VIP treatment of it all, you know, even puking at the finish line. So that's,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe the interview would have been better in a chair or something, I think, the next day.
But it's funny because she asked me, like, oh, are you fine with standing up? And I was like, yeah, no problem. And I stood up, and then I was thinking, like, oh, my God. After 3 minutes of interview, I was thinking to myself, like, I'm either going to throw up on her or I'm going to faint. and then it just happened.
Okay. Well, hopefully you're sitting down for this one.
Yeah. Sitting down, no worries.
Awesome. What has running taught you, would you say?
Running has really taught me that, like, you can work towards anything you want in life. Like, I think that nobody can wake up, or maybe a few exceptions, but not a lot of people can just wake up one day and decide to run 100 miles. Like, I think you really, really have to prepare yourself for it. And especially if you want to do well at it, like, I think that it requires a lot of preparation, a lot of process. And I think that's true for a lot of things in life. Like, you can't just show up one day and be a doctor. You can't just show up one day and be an excellent mother. I think that there's a lot of ways that you can shape your life. And running has taught me that, like, whatever it is that I want to do, as long as I prepare myself for it, like, I can be ready for it. So I think that that's definitely my biggest takeaway. But I'd say ultra running as a whole has really also introduced me to the concept of community and in a certain way that there's no difference, you know, when we show up on the start line, there's no race, there's no age, there's no gender. It's really just everyone's there for the same reason. Everyone's there for just, you know, going through the journey of 100 miles. And I love that. Like, I love that when you show up at a run club, like, it doesn't really matter what the person does in their, like, as a job, and you're just out there for running and you're having the best of times. And I really, really enjoy that. And I love that running has opened up my eyes to the importance of diversity and the importance of just, you know, surrounding yourself with different types of people. And yeah, I'd say that that's what I appreciate the most about running.
That's awesome. And I mean, it's also like nice, accessible sport, you know, for people to enjoy. And like you say, it brings people together from the community and, you know, runners, there's runners everywhere now, you know, so, and it's a growing sport. And yeah, it's awesome that, you know, you can just show up and who knows who you're running next to. Somebody might be running next to you and have no idea what you have just done. But that's the beauty of it too. And
that's more than okay.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. And what would you say running means to you?
You know, running, like I said, like, ever since I've been injured for quite some time, running is so much more than just a sport. It's really, it's crazy how much it means to me, in the sense that it just provides me with so much joy, and it means the world to me, in the sense that it brings me to the world. I've traveled so much through running. I've met so many people through running. Like, most of my friends are runners, and not because I only want runners to be my friends, but I just think that it opened, you know, it gave me friendship that I would have never developed without running. And it brought me to places I would have never been without running. So running is so much more than just the act itself. It's just, it's everything that I do, and it's everything that I want to do.
Well said. Yeah, that's awesome. And like you say, you know, when you immerse yourself in a passion, I think you attract the same thing in your life. So there's no wonder that you have some great people around you who share that same gift, that same drive and passion too. So yeah, that's awesome. Marianne, where can people find out more about you?
Well, they can follow me either on Instagram. My handle is Marianne in Bedford. And that means the city I'm from. And they can follow me on Strava as well, just Marianne Hogan. And they can follow me on Facebook as well. But I'd say the biggest place where I post things is more Instagram. I really like the aspect of sharing pictures with your thoughts.
And people can look you up for coaching and stuff like that too, I'm sure, on Instagram.
They can look me up on coaching. There's the application right under my profile. They can just click if they want to have me as a coach.
So great. That's awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. Congratulations on your amazing finish at Western States, and I'm glad that you're back healthy and racing to your potential, and I can't wait to see what you're up to next.
Great. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. I was looking for a tasty, vegan-friendly alternative to traditional gels, and Exact Energy Bars passed the test. Now available in Canada and the US, you'll definitely want to try them on your next long run. And they're offering you 15% off your order when you use the promo code LaRundown. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today. Thank you for joining us on this episode of LaRundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at LaRundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.